You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long-Form Conversations Podcast. From New York City, I'm Molly Gaby. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I am the beautiful host. I know you can't see me, but God, am I beautiful. And my guest today is Louis Vega, who improv fans might know from Lloyd Team, This Old House, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And currently, Harold Team Sleuth.
That's right.
Any other things people may know you from that should get on the table right now?
I was in a show called The Terry Withers Mysteries.
Oh, my God,
which
yes.
ended very recently. Mm-hmm. That was very fun. And then my first Harold Team was Slam Ball.
Slam Ball, of course.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What a fun list.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm excited for this because we actually have, I don't think we've ever really had a conversation.
I know.
This is what's so funny about Harold Knight. You see each other, when you're not on a team together, you rarely have time to interact.
I know. I feel like there's a bunch of people I would like to have longer conversations with, but some of the time in the green room for me is budgeted to be like, well, I'm going to be around my team.
Yeah.
So I feel like I don't see them during the day.
Mm-mm.
So when we're back there, we're like hanging out. And I think teams tend to do that. And there's like people hanging out with each other, obviously. But we've never really had a long conversation. It's nice.
I don't think ever.
I know.
So this is, honestly, I'm thrilled. I can't wait.
Me too.
So I'm going to have to get into some basics because of that.
Okay.
So why don't we start, for me and for people listening at home, just take us on a journey, I guess. Because you are kind of relatively young/new to UCB.
Yeah, definitely. I would categorize myself that mm-hmm. way. I am 25.
Oh my God.
And I started doing improv like 3 years ago.
Wow.
Just about. So I graduated from Marymount Manhattan College,
mm-hmm.
which is in the city. And then I heard about a friend who was doing an internship here at UCB. And they were like, you got to talk to this guy. This guy's like running the sales department over there, like, go talk to him. His name's Terry Withers. You got to go talk to him. So I called Terry.
Wait, would you cold call Terry Withers?
I called him. I was like, hey, I heard about this position. My friend was like, it said that you guys were looking for people. And he said,
who the hell is this? How'd you get my phone number? What?
No, he said, Louis, we need people. We need people bad.
We need us so bad.
We need us so bad. He was not shy about his desperation for needing people to work, come work. And so I went in to meet with him, and we hit it off very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started doing shows with Terry not too much later.
Mm-hmm.
And became became buddies. And then through that first week that I started my internship was the first week that I did 101.
Wow. That's kind of insane.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That's literally insane.
Yeah. Couldn't have met in a very good way. And I use crazy in a good way.
Right.
I couldn't have met a crazier person like coming mm-hmm. into UCB.
I know. That's an interesting pairing to have with you going through 101 and then
talking to Terry and being around him. His energy very much rubbed off. Like, on me, I think, having mm-hmm. the way that he thinks is great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting way to get into your experience in classes.
Mm.
So
mm-hmm.
you must have had a kind of a different perspective. You were sort of entrenched in UCB from the very beginning, I guess, then. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think my class experience was always positive. I had Molly Lloyd,
mm-hmm.
Who then became a part of the Terry Withers Mysteries. So that was another very, very insane, fun thing for me to do. Because Molly's one of my favorite people.
So amazing.
She's so great.
Yeah.
And she was my 101 teacher, and she really communicated the, like, love for it. Mm-hmm. I think she's an incredible teacher in general, but especially if you're just starting to do it.
Yeah.
There's something about being around her that's like, oh, yeah, you want to be doing this.
Was she your 101?
Yeah, she was my 101
that's
teacher.
So perfect. You want your 101 to be kind of just like a mama bear.
Yeah.
Just all smiles. She's just so wonderful.
Who was your 101? I'm sure.
Ari Vukitis.
Ari Vukitis.
Who is, you know, definitely a mama bear. Love him so much. you're right. You need the most positive, wonderful people. I'm glad you had Molly as your 101 teacher.
Yeah, she was great.
Then you must have risen through the ranks pretty fast. 3 years. That's not much time at all.
No, it's not much time at all. I feel very fortunate to have gotten on a team and all those things. It's been the best. It's been so awesome.
That's great. So This old house, right, was your Lloyd team?
This old house, my first Lloyd team, yeah. We really tried to, I think, in the way that, like, teams try to become a family, I think we really tried to do that. And it was so much fun. I love all those people to death. Mm-hmm. And it was a really fun, very interesting experience, like being on your first team always is. I think you learn what that means. So you learn what, like, people are like, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was great.
That's great because sometimes, you know, you got to force the family atmosphere. But you guys, I saw you went on trips and everything. And
it was very, very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love those guys.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then pretty soon after that, you got on Slam Ball, right?
I got on Slam Ball, yeah.
Did you replace somebody, right?
Or I think so. I don't know who left or what happened exactly. But yeah, there were two spots open on Slam Ball, and me and another teammate, Bill DiPiero, got moved up to Slam Ball. And it was that was an incredible experience, too. Because I had gone to see Slam Ball, and I was a big fan.
Mm-hmm.
So I think seeing them, that was the energy that I liked, this sort of, like, kind of raucous kind of energy. And to join that was unbelievable. It was, like, really, really fun.
Yeah. What was the energy like? What was it like switching from team to team? Because those teams had definitely different, much different vibes, right?
For sure. And I think there's the, like, thing of space, right? So one of is at the Beast, and that's, like, a very challenging, and I think on purpose, it's like you got to work to have a good show. And then the energy of the team, I think there was I think for me something felt a little more like when I the Slam Ball, there were a few weeks at the beginning where it was very much like, oh, you got to be funny and prove yourself and all that stupid shit that you think at the beginning when you join a team. And then eventually, I think I was just like, fuck that. I just need to... It's diminishing returns if I stop just doing the kind of improv I like to do. Because then, why was I put on? Like, what good use am I if I'm not doing the kind of thing I like doing?
That's so funny. I just talked about that with Gary a little bit, being switched onto a team. For the first couple of shows, felt like I had to fill the hole. Sorry.
Yeah.
Feeling like I had to fill the hole there. And then it just clicked suddenly. Be like, no, you got put on to be yourself.
100%.
Yeah. It's kind of a weird transition, though.
I think that's a very hard thing to learn. Because, like, there is all this weight that comes with getting onto a team. Even on the Lloyd team and on a Harold team. Any team, really. Where you're like, oh, I need to be the best improviser. I need to be the funniest person. It's like, no, you don't. You just need to be, like, do the kind of improv you like doing. And hopefully you will fit into a team dynamic.
Yeah. There's 7 other people up there.
There's so many.
Chill out. Be yourself.
Be yourself. There's enough room for you to be yourself. There's 7 other people doing their own thing, too.
I love this. Okay, so again, we are pretty much perfect strangers here.
For real.
I love this so much. So what is the kind of improv that you like to watch? Like, how do you like to be affected when you're watching an improv show?
I think this is maybe a little leftover from Terry and from acting, because I went to school for acting. But I think something that feels like it's got a little meat on its bones. So something that is strange, something that is, like, passionate, something that is, like, well-acted. The kind of improv that I like to watch is something where I'm like, oh, I think those people care about what's going on. whether it's in the energy or in the, like, fun that they're having, but just, like, watching something that looks like it has energy behind it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to watch that. And I think, like, great acting is something that I'm very, very interested in. There's some, like, really phenomenal actors, and I think that's something that I struggle with because I break a lot in shows. So I think when I see that, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's what I want to be doing more of.
No, I'm totally on that boat. I find myself I mean, especially when you're on teams with these people. They're so goddamn funny.
I know.
But it's such – we should probably tell people what the Terry Withers Mysteries show was about just to
give that –
Yeah, so you laid that out.
Yeah, sure. The Terry Withers Mysteries was a show that was like – it was started by J.D. and Connor – and it was, and this is a term normally reserved for, like, television shows, but it was, like, executive produced by them or, like, produced by them. It felt like that, and they wanted you to feel like that. Mm-hmm. And what it was basically the audience would create a crime scene, so they would bring things eventually from home. But for the beginning of the run, Connor had, like, a bag of props, and he would be like, oh, you know, where does this go? And they would come out and treat it like this, like, mystery show. It was, like, well introduced. And then a crime scene would be put in place, and then Terry would come out and try to solve a crime sort of in real time. And he never knew who the guests were. So we would have people from UCB. We would have people from other theaters as well, like, coming in and being people he's interrogating, sort of Law and Order style, like when someone's, you know, bussing a table or something, and they're like, hey, have you heard about this crime? And it was Terry and Noah Foreman, who are amazing, amazing improvisers, and they would go around and, like, interview these people, and there was one long interrogation scene, usually reserved for some sort of, you know, celebrity improviser or whatever, and I learned more watching those scenes than I have in a long time. Like, oh, watching that show, getting to be a part of it was incredible. Watching it was unbelievable. Just having a reason to be there and watching the show was so fucking good. All of the people there was such a lesson. Noah was incredible. Terry, everyone who was a part of the show, Seb, and I was Terry's son. So Terry would come home to Molly, who was his wife, my mom, Molly Lloyd, and I was his son. And basically, it was like a dysfunctional family. So I was like a wild child, basically. Mm-hmm. And I would, you know, have a lot of issues I was going on, you know, that were going on with me. And
that's such a wonderful, insane show to be thrown into.
It was very strange.
So what you were saying that you learned a lot, what were some of the things that you learned from those scenes that you would watch between Terry and the person being interrogated?
I think the confidence of, and we had the privilege of having those characters set up. Like, I played the same character every time we did the show, and Terry did too, obviously. But the confidence of improvising with it's gonna sound dumb, like, confidence, I guess.
Yeah.
So, like, coming on being like, I know who I am, let's go. So, like, I think Neil Casey and other people have talked about this too, but, like, assuming, like, an attitude or, like, just sort of being confident in the way that you feel about another person, that kind of stuff was like, oh, yeah, it makes the scene so much easier if you are confident in how you're playing the scene. And also, I think, like, Neil Casey, Mike O'Brien, I mean, Shannon did a great job. Those were some of the killers that I would watch, and they would remember Sylvia Ozels, would remember, like, they would watch the whole show, remember every insane thing Terry had said. Because during the course of the show, he would be like, I used to work at a toothpick factory, and then, you know, I left because whatever. And they would take all those throwaway things and thread them together during the course of the interrogation and weave them into Terry's backstory or into their own backstory. And it was a lesson in, like, listening, being like, how acutely can you listen and try to use that information to charge the scene? It was Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's I can imagine it'd be nice to be able to just simply watch a show and then be able to come on with all that information. Because a lot of times when I'm performing, you know, you got to be so in the moment.
Yeah.
And then also be listening at the same time. Sometimes I'm like, how the fuck am I supposed to be able to do this?
I know.
Are you serious? This is too much.
Would you say that you are like a from the gut or from the head?
Oh my God.
Kind of player.
I've
seen you play, but I want to know what you
it's
think.
All in my guts, my disgusting fucking gutty guts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And so because of that, you know, literally your brain and your guts are so far apart. So it's a physical transformation for me to go from playing to listening. So I don't know if it's as difficult for other people, but for me, it's a conscious decision, kind of. It's hard for me to do that at the same time. Is that true for you? Am I a crazy person? Or
No. You are. I consider myself, and it's interesting, like, what roles on the team you fill, but I consider myself a very gutsy player, mm-hmm. where I don't mean that in any sort of, like, confident way. I just mean, like, I tend to be like, oh, what is the thing that I resonate most with? Or, like, how do I feel about this person or something? Am I feeling angry? Am I feeling happy? And I let that pull me around.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes to the detriment of, where I'm like, oh, I feel like I might have derailed the thing because I wasn't listening. I think I play my best when I marry those two things.
Yeah.
So when I find a way to be like, oh, I know who I am, I'm playing from my gut, and I'm also like, I feel like I'm listening too.
Mm-hmm.
It that's really hard, though. There are some people who do that very well that I'm like, oh, yeah.
I do find it easier when, I mean, playing from the gut, I think just means tapping into your emotional point of view. It sounds like that's what you're saying they do in Terry Withers' Mysteries a lot. Because once you have that base, you just put it through that filter and then you're, you know how you're going to react.
Exactly.
But sometimes I just forget to come from that emotional point of view and I just start an orgy scene. I'm going to shoehorn that into this interview as well.
Did you talk about it before?
Louis, I love orgy scenes. It just gets everybody on the same page.
What do you like about an orgy scene?
Because
I agree with you. I've done a lot of orgy scenes, and I like start to, like, if I ever see a situation where it's like a swingers party,
yes,
something, I'm like, all right, well, we should be having an orgy already.
Thank you so much. Now, we covered this in my last one, my opinions on why I think it gets everybody on the same page. I love to physically connect with my teammates.
Me too.
And it just brings you together in a way that words can't. Now, I want to hear from a fellow improviser who is on my side about being pro-orgy scenes, about what you think.
I think for very similar reasons. Mm-hmm. It gets people to, like, connect in a way that maybe in the beginning, I mean, and obviously, for God's sake, if you feel uncomfortable doing an orgy scene, I think you can read the room and be like, all right, my team doesn't want to do that.
Right. But I should have given that disclaimer the 8 times I mentioned it in my episode. And people are going to be listening to this and won't be able to believe that I brought it up again. But continue,
don't care.
Please. Yeah.
I think it allows you to be like, yeah, let's go to a place that I've never been, right? Mm-hmm. I've never taken part of an orgy. But it would be like, yeah, let's go to a place where we haven't been and we're connecting. It's physical. It's like, it's intimate for sure. And it feels like a bonding experience.
Exactly. It's a bonding experience. And the stakes are so high, basically, that any little thing you do will become the game very, very quickly.
For sure.
Because it's a grounded reality. Orgies happen.
For
it's
sure.
It's grounded, but it's also high stakes.
For sure.
So if you, any, and the first unusual thing will be the game. Students,
do hear more me. Orgy scenes.
I'm going to get fired from UCB. I'm Sally. I mean, they don't employ me, but, you know, they'll kick me out.
Use your best judgment if someone's uncomfortable to do an orgy scene. If you are with a team who you've been performing with for a while, my God, you need to do an orgy scene.
My
if you
God.
Have.
What
Please.
Are you waiting for? Yes, disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer. Okay. Now that I shoehorned that into this interview as well,
mm-hmm.
like, so you mentioned you have acting training, and I'm always curious how that affects somebody's improv that they do now, because I took some acting classes in college. Just want to put that out there.
Oh, shit.
But I thought they were total bullshit.
Yeah.
I couldn't get into it.
Yeah.
I had a professor literally named Kermit Dunkelberg.
That's an insane name for sure. And it sounds like, and you're saying it's not a fake name.
It is not a fake name, incredibly. And he would have us do this exercise. I think this might be a famous exercise.
Yeah.
Called the cat. It's like it's a warm up where you just, maybe I made this man up in my mind, but he would make us act like cats for a while. Anyway, that's why I really was averse to getting into all that acting bullshit. But now I very much want to go back to it because I see how it can affect your improv in very positive ways.
Yeah, I think I totally agree with you that there was a lot of stuff that I went through acting school with that didn't resonate and felt phony and felt like forced. It felt like someone trying to force a reaction out of me, and that was terrible. I think what I like about it is the commitment, because I have problems with that, so I like don't commit sometimes. Being able to portray somebody believably is great. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the things that I love about my favorite improvisers is when you watch them, when they disappear into a person, you're like, oh, I believe that you are that person. That's my favorite thing to watch. Mm-hmm. People who can play like brainiacs or, you know, or freakos or like smart people.
Freakos,
weirdos.
That's
a term Luke and I like using.
Luke Field?
Oh, yeah.
Love that freako.
Luke is a freako.
Yeah, he's
Luke,
a freako.
If you're listening, you're a fucking freako,
dude. You're a
fucking
freako, bro.
You're a freako, bro. But I love the commitment, the, intensity. I think there's a level or a weight when you have some sort of, acting experience sometimes that you can bring, that I try to bring. Mm-hmm. I don't always do it, but I try to remember that. I think some acting techniques are useful, like beats. Taking scenes, thinking of scenes into beats, objectives, like what you want from another person. Mm-hmm. I think some of those acting principles are really helpful because they are locked in and focused on the other person. Mm-hmm. So it's as much of your energy as you can put into reading and focusing on the person you're playing with, the better. If that energy is looking inward, save that shit for when you're at home.
That's for the birds.
That shit's for the birds. If you're on stage with somebody, you should be like, how can I connect or try to impact the other person?
Yeah. That's a great way to look at it. That sounds like next level listening type of shit.
For sure. And that's something that I try to get better at. Mm-hmm. That's very hard.
I have a question about characters.
Yeah.
Because I know the way I do it. Whenever I'm like, I'm going to be the insane character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What happens to you in the moment before you choose that character? Is there a physical thing you do or choose within your body? Or just to make it, for me, because I just don't want to do the same characters over and over. I want to give it a little bit of nuance. I'm wondering if for you there's a trick you use or something else to make it, you know, a new character, a new scene, new experience.
Each time.
Yeah.
First of all, I think I do end up recycling a lot of characters. I think because they're fun to play. But I think, channeling a thing. So just straight up stealing. So if you remember a thing from a movie or a book or a character like that.
Or Seinfeld. I love how you just do straight up Seinfeld scenes.
It's real fun and people get a real kick out of it when I do Seinfeld stuff.
Yeah.
I quote scenes and people don't get mad about it. But by the time you think about some sort of monster, so say that you're coming into play a monster or a creature or a witch or something nuts, I try to be like, all right, I'm going to try to take the physical affectation of a monster I've seen in a movie or something. Because by the time it gets funneled out through my weird fucking body, it's not the same. It's not the same thing. So it's not going to be like, oh, he's trying to do the monster from Alien or something. Mm. I'm not good enough at doing that. It will come out as my own weird sort of bastard monster that it's like, oh, now you've created a new thing. But I think it's hard for me to pull out of thin air. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes I'll choose a weird body position or something like that.
That's my jam. I love that.
I love that too. I think there's something real freeing about playing a crazy character that I wish everybody – I would encourage people to do. I think it's really fun.
Yeah. Same thing about orgy scenes. You know, we really encourage that. Okay, I'm sorry. That's the 10th time I've brought that into this.
No. It's good. We need to hit 20 by the end. By the end of your appearances, we hit 10 more.
They're just so fun.
They're really fun. Do you end up playing, and I probably, we'll move on, but do you, because it seems like you do like playing orgy scenes, do you play a different character in an orgy scene?
Oh, yeah, every time. I mean... And also, I mean, an orgy scene can be so many different things. Basically, I just want my whole team out there doing the most physically challenging thing they can do. It's just, you have, I mean, the stage is so wonderful and open and big. I just want to fill it with everybody's bodies. The moment when I turn to the back line and I have to point at everybody and they go, again, and I say, yes, again, get out here.
Get out here, please. there's nothing that I love more than, like, doing something really physical on stage, even if it isn't an orgy scene, and it should be, but if it isn't, something really physical, like just getting an entire team to be like a hive, to just do something together that's physical and weird, where you're not fucking thinking about it, you're not standing in a semicircle being like, all right, and now another weird thing.
Yeah.
Because that happens a lot, and I like doing those scenes much as the next guy, but I think there's something very special about getting your entire team. We had a scene with my Herald Team Sleuth where we were this like group of people excavating this giant tomb, and we were like climbing on top of each other and like forming these like weird shapes where we were like, it's hard to describe, but it was so physical and it was so fun. And those scenes are fun to watch. Like, when you're in the audience, you want to see scenes like that. You want to see orgies.
Now you do, because I told you you do.
I think, going back to your original question, what do you do, like, in the moment right before where you're like, oh, they're either talking about a weirdo or they're, you know, I'm about to play somebody like that. Like, what do you do to keep it fresh for yourself?
Me?
Yeah.
Ooh, turning the tables. I definitely go to a physical place because my brain is not going to come up with something as nuanced as I want to. So if I follow my fucking elbow wherever it wants to go, I'll be creepy elbow lady. And then I would have never done that before, although she's a recurring character now. She loves the orgies. But it's all very, very physical for me. I took a Jordan Klepper class where you had to start with a very small action and your entire character came from that. And I very much connect with that because I'm not a brain person. My inspiration doesn't come from there.
Yeah. There are people who can have one foot in and one foot out, like sort of seeing, I guess specifically when you're talking about a Herald, because it is, you do need to have your brain outside of it a little bit to be looking over it. Some people are very good at that where they're like, all right, I see this character that can fit here, sort of like little puzzle pieces. I am very much an in-the-moment player where I will lose myself in a scene where I'm like, oh, this has probably been going on for too long because I have no sense of time. I, like, black out up there and I'm like, oh, I'm – especially if you're playing a character, you, like, don't – you don't want to leave, right?
You never want to leave that little space.
No.
Honestly, even when it's going badly, when you're really invested in a character – you just never want it to end.
No, you don't want it to end. Even if the audience is like, hey, we don't like this. We don't understand what's going on. You're like,
and they let you know.
Tough.
Ever been heckled?
Have I ever been heckled? Not directly, but I would imagine, I think I've done at least a show or two where someone has shouted something out.
That's called heckling. Unless you got the suggestion from them.
No. That's not what I do consider that heckling, though.
Wow. You heard it here first.
What about you? Have you ever been heckled?
One time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, in the middle of a coworker show, some drunk lady shouted out
that she
didn't
like
my...
Oh, I was there.
Oh, you were?
I was there, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
That was intense.
Bitch didn't like my eyebrows, apparently.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. Being heckled in an improv show is a very bizarre experience.
There's nothing to return to because you are making everything up. So there's not this like thing of like, well, excuse me, we have a thing to return to. It almost feels like this weird pressure where it's like, well, we can do anything, so we can address it if we want. Which is like
weird.
I know.
I mean, there was so much pressure, I think, immediately to make it a thing.
A thing, yeah.
That
totally.
I think we made it 10 things.
yeah.
But either way, she She then exclaimed that she had taken a 401, I think.
Good for her.
You know what? Great for her.
Good for her.
She's doing her thing. And then she got kicked out. Shout out to that woman. Now I get my eyebrows waxed every day.
You lost sleep?
Oh, yeah. 100%. But let's take it back to you, because let's be real. You are the guest of me, the host.
Let's be real.
And I'm liking the, I mean, because I'm just meeting you.
Yeah.
But I think we connect on the coming from an emotional
I agree.
Place.
Yeah.
So I talked a lot about my failures in the last one. So I want to know about you and your successes. And, like, I know it's lame to, like, recount improv scenes, but
sure.
I like to hear from people when they – when something is clicks for them.
Yeah.
And so was there a specific instance where you were like, fuck yeah, I tried that thing, that emotional place worked, or it just everything came into place, and this is where the magic happened?
Yes.
No, that never happened. Next question.
Yeah, no, that has never happened. I guess I should have mentioned that at the top. The touring UCB Tour Cup.
Yes, so that's amazing. I love.
That's very, very fun. And I'm on a team with Luke and Lily Dew and Caitlin Puckett. Some of my favorite people in the world.
Favorite freakos.
There are a bunch of freakos. They're going to be so excited I'm using the word freak so much in this goddamn podcast. But we were doing this show. I think it was in, oh God, was it in Delaware maybe? I don't know. But we were playing, and this is out of, this scene description is out of an improv textbook. So we were playing witches auditioning for a ham commercial. And I played this witch who was like a freak, but was I like tapped into this like thing I hadn't before, which is this just like sort of release of crazy in a way that I hadn't allowed myself. Like this person was just like was crazy. So I hunched over and was like kind of yelling my lines at the ground, and it was a release for me, and it was satisfying. And I think that scene, which had Luke being a witch and Lily being a witch too, and Caitlin was like the moderator, and she did such an amazing job of like a straight man job of like not saying no. Mm-hmm. So like so clearly these people are weird, right? But she was just like allowing us to do the audition and getting along with the process of it, basically creating a platform for us to just do our weird thing instead of being like, you're not allowed to do the weird thing. It's like, no, just let us do the weird thing and then we'll edit the scene. And I promise we'll edit the scene. And I like tapped into this place that was such a weird release of energy that felt like, it's going to make me sound like an insane person, but it felt like manic. Mm-hmm. It was like I was like channeling into something that I was like yelling or something like that. And it was still in the context of a scene, and I think I was doing a good job listening. Who knows? I hope I was.
We cut to that scene. You're just taking a dump all over the
stage. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What a release.
Yelling everywhere. But that scene was like a moment where I personally felt like I had unlocked something. I allowed myself to go somewhere that I think I put up constantly in improv and in my life, put up barriers for myself constantly where I'm like, oh, you can't do that, or you're not good enough to do that, or you shouldn't do that, or whatever, whatever. And I think I just allowed myself to walk through a door that was like, oh, there's this crazy place. Can you just enter it and just be like an insane person for 2 minutes? And I did it, and it was so rewarding personally to know that you can go there, right?
Yeah.
Tap into that. That was a great, and there are so many other moments. I think there have been moments on This Old House and Slam Ball, moments where I feel like I am surrendering to the voice of the team. Mm-hmm. So we are playing together as like a whole instead of like I talk and then you talk and someone edits. then this person talks, and then this other person talks, and then someone edits, and then we all talk, and then someone edits. It's like there is a powerful thing to creating a show where it feels like it's the whole, it's the team's voice, mm-hmm. and that's an elusive thing that I think teams chase, which is like, what is our thing we're trying to do mm-hmm. as a team together? That there have been moments of that on every team I've been on where you tap into it and you're like, ooh, that. How do we just do that a bunch? And it's really hard.
Yeah.
What have your experiences been with that? Do you feel the same way on a team?
I always, you know, you always strive for that, but that's something you can't force, you know?
I know.
And, yeah, I mean, I guess people who are like, on indie teams or something, I would say not to worry about that. It's such a special thing when you do have a voice as a giant team. I mean, it's 8 crazy people. It's hard to, you know.
It's hard to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I wanted to know more about. So I'm so interested in the fact that you started in the most insane place in the world, which is Terry Withers Mysteries, mm-hmm. and how. That commitment, because I'm the same way. I'm like, a commitment would be a whole nother level if we could just bring all that commitment into every scene. What would you say to like a student who's like, Louis, look, this is how Gary put it to me. He's standing outside of Gristiti's, chewing on a piece of bark.
Cool.
He says, Louis, I just saw your show.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
What advice do you have on me on how I could be that committed in my show?
Be that committed?
Yeah. You can also choose to just steal the things he bought at Gristiti's and run. This is a choose your own adventure question.
This is a choose my own adventure. Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't steal shit. I'm not at that point in my life yet where I need to steal someone from someone who's giving me a compliment. But I would say confidence. Be confident in yourself and know that the character that you're playing is good and is smart and is whatever it is that you want it to be. And that should be the rope that you hold on to. You should be holding on to your own rope, which just means like trusting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you will constantly go out there and flounder,
which
is what I did for a while, which was like trying to impress. I mean, and there's a good level of trying to impress your teammates and whatever. But you need to be like, I got it.
Yeah.
And I can fucking go out there and kill it. And do a great job. Even if you don't, and you won't every time, you will have scenes where you suck and you're not listening and you're all these other things. But just learning to trust yourself a little more, I think, gives you a lot of confidence to lose yourself in a character. Because then you're like, well, I trust myself. Mm-hmm. So I can play committed because I trust what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard, though.
It is. I remember coming through classes, and it's kind of like when you watch stand-up. Not that I do stand-up, but,
sure.
You know, when you watch someone do it, then you find yourself acting like them, too.
Yeah.
Like, for a while, I was like, am I trying to be Will Hines in my scenes? I wish somebody would have told me early on that what your brand is, ew, I just said that. You should dive into that more than pull away from that.
Yeah.
So I wish I would have learned that very early on. I guess that's part, you know, you want to have your hand in each part of improv. But the thing that you love doing and that you're good at, keep, like, flame that fire.
Yeah. Keep pushing yourself there.
Yeah. So I mean, that's why I'm literally incredible at orgy scenes now. I mean, I can initiate them. I find the game very quickly.
You respond.
I respond. I'm emotionally committed.
Right.
You
can take them to an interesting place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Orgy in space. Orgy in the president's office.
Done it all.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
What's your favorite fucking happy place in improv? Like, what's your character? What's your favorite character to play?
Somebody who is, I'm going to use this word again, somebody who's a freak. Somebody who's like, and I use it positively. I use that positively for like a confident weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who is like very strange and confident, I think, is a big one. A confident freak. So somebody is like a weirdo and they're okay being a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
They're aware they're weird. I love playing that and I love seeing it.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite name to give people in scenes?
I love for like restaurants and stuff, I like saying Danielle's. So like, this is Danielle's place or something. Or I love like weird. I do try to make a point. I think naming people is way more important than people give a credit for.
I think you should totally agree.
Be naming everybody. Mm-hmm. I like.
You can't steal Danielle though. That's Louis's thing.
Don't steal Danielle. I will say it on stage in Herald Night again. I said it last week. I said it in Torco rehearsal.
He'll say it again.
And I'll say it again. It's a threat. I like. I like as I think I like women's names a lot. Mm-hmm. I think especially because I play with mostly like I play with a lot of dudes. Mm-hmm. So I like, you know, playing ladies in scenes and just having it be that we're two women instead of two men.
Listen, as a woman, I'm telling you, it's great being a woman.
I know.
It's incredible. It's great being a Danielle. I can only.
A Danielle.
Yeah.
A Whitney.
Ooh, Whitney.
Naming people colors is great. That's a great one. So, like, chartreuse, naming people violet, naming people.
Blue.
Naming
green.
People blue, green.
Immediately, it does. I know we're joking, but it gives them an immediate emotional place to come from or a point of view.
Especially if your name's Blue,
mm-hmm.
you are a person, right? Mm-hmm. So that gives you a marker somewhere far away you can aim for.
Mm-hmm. You're a French boat driver.
Driver. Not a gondola.
Don't. Not a gondola. And I know I'm going to get a lot of flack from the gondola industry.
The industry's listening, and not just the gondola fans, but the industry. And, you know, I don't know how many times we have to say it on the podcast. This isn't for you.
This isn't for you. Stop listening.
Stop listening.
Jesus.
Please.
Give us one safe space.
What's your favorite name to go to?
I do, like, skull something, anything with skull in it.
Skull. That's tough.
Yeah.
And it's for anybody, so yeah. They don't have to be, like, a tough character?
No, for anybody. I'm going to start using Kermit Dunkelberg because that was a repressed memory I just brought up.
I can't believe that was a person. And he would make you, hold on, he would make you act like cats?
Mm-hmm.
What was it that you didn't like about acting, or what was it that didn't resonate with you that you were like,
it seemed like everybody
this.
Was taking it way too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
I was like,
mm-hmm.
This acting is play pretending.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, just the warm-ups. There was this one guy who would do this warm-up that would go like this. Hey! He'd be... Sorry, Molly, I can't talk. Hey! And I was just like, I don't want to be that guy.
You want to be that dude who's warming up?
Not
like that.
No. I mean, but now I very much do. I'm older and wiser, and I, you know... There's no shame in just going headfirst into... A character
warm-up.
Or a vocal warm-up. Look like an idiot. I just don't think I was willing to look like an idiot at that time.
For sure. And I think that there's a part of that where you're like, oh, I don't want to do that.
Oh, it's
that's
all ego.
For dumb.
Yes.
That's for dummos.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's another part of it where people are like performing being an actor, if that makes sense, where they're like, yes, I have to warm up and very self-important. It's like, fuck off. You don't need to be doing any of that at all. And nobody cares. Nobody's watching and nobody cares about that. It made me so angry because the inherent thing is like, if I do that, I'm better than you.
Mm-hmm.
So like when I put on this thing and when I interrupt you and when I sing louder than you, I'm better than you. No, you're not.
No, you're not. Okay, you hear that?
You're not.
You're not.
Sorry. You're not.
Good. I'm glad that all those actors know that. No, but guys, please, we love you. We want you in improv. Take yourself seriously.
Please.
Please do. Okay, just, I know that we took a little break. Is there any other little fun things that I don't know about you that you want to dive into? Doesn't have to be fun either. It can be
Not
fun.
I'm trying to think. I love... food. I love sandwiches.
Keep this in, Ben. Keep this in.
Keep this in, Ben. I think it is. It is super important to like different things other than improv. Mm-hmm. I think to like at least like one other or two other things. I think when you are like,
these are specific pieces of advice. One or two other things, please enjoy.
Please enjoy one or two other things in your life that are not improv. I think it is unbelievably important to have a life and diversify your life.
Hey, guess what I don't know about?
What?
Your life.
Yeah.
Well, what's your one and two things?
That I do that I don't.
Yeah.
I love to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I read. I'll read anything. So I read, like, newspapers.
Improv manuals.
Books. I read improv manuals. I read improv blogs. I read transcripts of this podcast. No, I do love reading about improv and all that kind of stuff. But I love reading in general. I love reading fiction, nonfiction, anything. I recently watched a thing that was about like 10 ways. There was this talk this guy gave about how to live a creative life, something like that. And one of them was like, don't get all of your news or information from one place. Try to diversify where you're hearing things from.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's hugely important. So I think if you are like, get all your information from the things that your friends repost on Facebook or something.
Or Trump TV.
Or Trump TV.
Just signed up.
Trump TV.
Mm-hmm.
Sign up. Do not get all your information from one place. Try to get information from everywhere. It's important to open up different networks in your brain for how different people think. And I think I learned that because I was born in Mexico. Mm-hmm. So I think being a sort of a child of like two cultures, because I was born in Mexico and then moved here when I was 9. So I grew up partway in Mexico and then partway in the United States. And I think it is very important to try to learn as many things from like different sources as you can, because you don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And not one place that you're getting all your information from knows everything.
Yeah. I didn't know you moved here when you were 9. Where did you move to?
I moved to Weymouth, Massachusetts, which is very
wow.
near Plymouth, Mass. Plymouth. Shout out to Plymouth Rock.
Matt. Wow. What a Puritan Yankee you are.
I know. And then I moved to Milford, Mass. And then I moved to New York for college, and then I've been here ever since.
Love it. So what do your parents think about you doing old improv?
Well, I think they think it's fun and nice.
And is there any improv in Mexico?
I cannot imagine. I'm sure there's some, but I really don't think that there is any. In the way that there is, like, overseas and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in the UK, there's a lot of improv. In Germany and stuff, there is. I'm made to believe. And in Mexico, there is, to my knowledge, nothing of that sort going on. There's not really that much of, like, a theater scene going on. So I can't imagine there's a lot of improv going on down there.
You never know.
I do never know. I got to investigate a little more. It'd be cool to find out what the scene is like. But my folks think it's nice. They've seen me improvise once or twice. They saw me do a set with an improv team of mine, and then they saw me do a two-prov set with Josh Sharp, which was, like, as a part of this, like, this Heroes thing that Nick Faitel was doing for a while. That was, like, Performer of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the most fun things I've done, because I love Josh. I think he's such an amazing performer. And they saw me do that, where I forget what the specifics of it were, but I think Josh was my uncle or something, and we might have been lovers or something like that. So I think they watched that and were like, oh, that's nice. And I made them watch. Terry Withers was doing a thing called e-improv, where it was improvised, like improv over like Google Hangout. And that was going on for a while. And I made them watch me and Vince Moore. We used to have a two-prov team. And I made them watch us do two-prov via the internet. And of course they were like, it felt like you guys just having a conversation. I really didn't understand that kind of thing. And, you know, who can blame them? I think it's so hard to get them to understand. They don't come from artistic backgrounds.
I think it's just hard to understand improv anyway, artistic or not.
I know.
My mother accused me of being very sarcastic once I went to college, because I learned how to do bits where you just become a character. And she thought that was being sarcastic. And then I learned that there was a word for it. No, it was a bit.
It was a bit. Did you realize, because I think I had the same thing, did you realize you had been doing that 100%. Forever.
And yeah. Then me and my friends had been doing characters, and then I learned the term bit. I was like, oh, look at me. I've been doing bits my whole life. I've
been doing bits
forever.
I'm going
to have so many friends when I grow up.
yeah.
It is a different way of interacting, though. And I wonder if a lot of people who do improv just naturally create scenes, you know, with their friends, and if that's because that's how I just always interacted with people, and
yeah.
I'm wondering if that, you know, those non-freakos out there.
I think that's true for the non-freakos. I think for anybody who didn't kind of grow up like that, I think you would do that a little bit, create bits a little bit, but I think not, certainly not to the extent mm-hmm. with somebody who like loved, you know, comedy growing up and watching whatever, listening to stand-up specials or watching TV shows or whatever the fuck. It really does become a part of your language where you, like, feel inclined to do it.
and you can't stop.
And you can't stop, yeah.
Have you ever been, I know, you know, bits get a little flack. I love bits. Have you ever been so into a bit that hours later you're still doing it and you've lost friends over it?
For sure. I have gone to, like, parties where me and my friends will be doing a bit and I've heard this a few times where someone will tune in and say, oh, that this is still going on. Have you heard that before? Where someone will be like,
I have heard that,
oh, is this still,
so many times.
You guys are still doing that? Something like that. Something to that effect. And the answer is yes.
The answer is yes. And get on board or get off of my houseboat.
Get on board or get off my houseboat, please.
That's so wonderful to know. I mean,
yeah, for sure. For sure, I like doing that. I think I am a person who I do love bits. Bits do get a lot of flack. I think I do like having real conversations with people. I think I prefer that as like an introduction, getting to know somebody. Mm-hmm. I like a bit. I love a bit. But I think, I mean, I also want to get to know, you know, that person. Although I guess a bit is a good way to sort of figure out what a person's sense of humor is.
Yeah, maybe not on a date. Let's go real conversation for date. Bits for later.
Mm-hmm. For a date?
No, not for a date. Don't do it on a date.
That's
please,
what I'm saying.
God, Louis, don't do it on a date. How many times do I have to tell you this?
Okay.
I know we are literal strangers, but I feel like I've been trying to tell you this forever.
I know you've been trying to. Okay, I have a call to make. I gotta talk to somebody. We had a thing set up. I need to cancel.
I know we like have no more time left, but we just got to a hot topic of dating.
Dating, yeah.
Have you ever been on a date where you tell someone there that you are a comedian
mm-hmm.
and then they say, me too?
And they're not?
Or
yes, I must have been on a date like that where I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm a comedian. I do, you know, improv or whatever. And they're like, oh, yeah, me too. I do that too. I'm like, what do you do? And they're like, oh, I work in an office or whatever.
I work at ZocDoc.
I work at ZocDoc. Have you ever been on a date where that's gone on?
I don't go on dates, Louis. I don't got time for that.
Oh, dang.
Hell no.
Anyone who's listening and wanted to get, you know, the scoop on Molly, she's available.
I ain't got time for that. Yeah, I'm available. Also, I'm available.
Also, I'm very available.
Very available. Good. Okay, good. I'm glad we shoehorned that in because that's really what it's all about when it comes down to this. This long-form podcast was just... I just wanted to let everybody know that I'm available and I'm really fun and cool and I'll do bits for hours and hours and hours. Also, orgy scenes are a great way to make friends.
I was about to put another orgy
yes.
reference in here, yeah.
Oh, God. Louis, this
great
was
way
great.
To make friends. Yeah.
Is there anything we missed that you really want to touch on or?
No, be a freak. Be confident.
Be a confident freako.
Even if you're bad, just be confident in being bad and someone will tell you, hey, don't do that weird thing anymore or do it a different way. But just be confident and be weird.
I love that. That's yeah. a great way to end. Guys, thank you so much for listening. This has been amazing. And that was a long form conversation. Tune into the next episode when I think we're going to be coming from you from LA.
Oh, yeah.
I believe. Los Angeles. So tune into that. Thank you for
Bye-bye.
Listening.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.